friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings, sports fans. This is the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington, filling in this week for Sonny Young. It's Friday, October 2nd. Thank you for tuning in. We got a great show for you lined up, so do not reduce the volume. Game 2 of the NBA Finals is tonight. The Los Angeles Lakers won Game 1 on Wednesday over the Miami Heat. The Lakers drained 11 three-pointers in the first half to obliterate the Heat's early 13-point lead and complete a 30-point turnaround, as Miami's defense was unable to match the intensity of 16-time All-Star LeBron James and Anthony Davis, who was the night's leading scorer with 34 points. AP's Dave Ferry has more.
Some people had doubts as to whether LeBron James and Anthony Davis could coexist on the same basketball court. Davis had been the star on every team for which he played before joining the Lakers in the summer of 2019, and LeBron was, well, LeBron. But according to Davis, the two have been tremendous, productive teammates as they chase the same goal.
That can always creep in when you got, like you said, two, you know, alpha males and on the same team. But I think when you got two guys who are very selfless and want to win, you know, as bad as both of us want to, the rest of it, you know, goes away.
James is three wins away from his fourth NBA championship. Davis is seeking his first. I'm Dave Ferry.
The Miami Heat insist they can bounce back from the tough Game 1 loss despite injuries that sidelined two of their top playmakers on Wednesday. Points guard Goran Dragic suffered a torn plantar fascia on his left foot, and forward Bam Adebayo suffered a neck strain. Both were doubtful to participate in Game 2 tonight, Miami said yesterday. All-star forward Jimmy Butler also rolled his ankle but managed to finish the game and will play tonight. Here's Butler.
They say when it's bad when it rains, it pours. All in all, though, we're still expected to win. We got here for a reason. We realize we belong, but we also realize how well we have to play on both ends of the floor to give ourselves a chance to win.
Here's Heat head coach Eric Spoelstra.
It's all hands on deck, and it's not like the guys that were, you know, potentially sliding into the rotation haven't played before. These guys have confidence and play big roles for us all year long. Our depth has been one of our biggest strengths. It's not just coach speak.
Lakers head coach Frank Vogel said his side needs to stay vigilant despite the Heat's injuries.
Everybody's a threat on the court at all times with how well they move without the basketball and how good their bigs are at passing the basketball. So, you know, we feel like this Miami team is as difficult to guard as any team we played in the playoffs thus far. And there's a reason they're 12-3 coming into this series. We can't let our guard down at all.
LeBron agreed.
You keep the same thing. You prepare for whoever's out on the floor. It's going to be five guys in opposing jerseys on the floor, and they're all dangerous. No matter who's in the lineup, no matter what the name is, you have to approach it like they all can beat you, you know, as a unit.
More on basketball, but this time in Somalia, where a group of young women are learning the sport. A Somali women's basketball team is thriving in Mogadishu despite threats from Islamist militants and disapproval from some in society. Edward Barron of Reuters reports.
Basketball practice for this all-female team in Somalia is not just hard because of the blistering heat. The women are also braving the scorn of their families and even the threat of attack by gunmen who think women should not play sport publicly. Fardoza Omar Ali is one of the players.
Mogadishu is risky. We cannot openly say we're going to play. We put our playing clothes and shoes into school bags and carry them like that to the field and pretend we're going to school or university, despite the insecurity and with no government that encourages or supports us. We still love playing basketball.
The women only play in compounds behind high concrete walls, shielding from the gaze of the curious or those who might attack them. One of the coaches of the 30-strong team is 51-year-old Nazra Mohammed. She says the women receive no funding.
No one supports us or gives us equipment, and we do not have anyone supporting the players with uniforms, balls, and shoes. We do not even have a proper court.
When they play matches, the trainers pool money to buy a cheap cup as a prize. But they love what they do and dream of starting teams all over Somalia.
Thanks to Edward Barron of Reuters for that report. The London Marathon takes place Sunday. The men's event offers the latest clash between two of the greatest male distance runners ever, Eliud Kipchoge of Kenya and Ethiopia's Kenenisa Bekele. The women's race is a matchup for three Kenyans: marathon world record holder Bridget Koske, world champion Ruth Chepngetich, and former London winner Vivian Cheruiyot. Athletics reporter Andy Edwards in London has the story.
In normal times, these races would be fascinating enough, and now are all the more so given the current situation. The coronavirus has forced the cancellation of so many sports events, including road races, but London has gone ahead with two elite races while the mass participants have the chance to run the marathon in a virtual event on the same day. Instead of a tour of London, the eyes of the marathon world will be on St James's Park within sight of Buckingham Palace. The women's elite will race at 7:15 on Sunday morning, followed by the men 3 hours later. To consider the men first, despite the high quality overall of the field, two names stand out, Eliud Kipchoge and Kenenisa Bekele. They have raced each other on the track and now the road for almost 20 years, going back to the Kenyan Kipchoge beating the Ethiopian Bekele and Morocco's Hisham El Garouge to the 5,000-metre title at the World Championships in Paris 17 years ago. On the track, Bekele has been the dominant figure, beating Kipchoge on 8 occasions against 2 defeats. But when first Eliud Kipchoge and then Kenenisa Bekele moved to the marathon, it was a very different story. The Kenyan has won all 4 of their contests and broke the world record in Berlin 2 years ago with 2:01.39, plus becoming the first man to break 2 hours for the distance in a specially constructed event last October in Vienna. But when many thought Kenenisa Bekele's career was over, he came back from injury and disappointing performances to win Berlin last September and finish a mere 2 seconds outside Kipchoge's world record. Here's a sample of Eliud Kipchoge's thoughts at the pre-race press conference, held with the media attending online, since athletes and organisers are now in a biosecure bubble.
I think the race will be really beautiful on Sunday. It will be good. Personally, I'm happy to come back and run again after a very long time, especially during this hard time of the pandemic, COVID-19. But all in all, is that after the can, then everything will be in its own space. That's on Sunday. But I promise the fans that we will enjoy the race and it will be a good race, which everybody will enjoy and bring hope to the whole world.
As for Kenenisa Bekele, he has had his ups and downs in recent years, even earning a rebuke from his manager Jos Hermans that he hasn't always prepared as thoroughly as he should have done. But the comeback in Berlin last year was astonishing. Civil unrest in Ethiopia this year has hardly been a help for any athlete, but Kenenisa often sounds a cautious note before a race.
My preparation was good because of COVID-19. Sometimes, of course, it's not perfectly, you know, going as we as I planned. More or less, you know, I prepared well.
A major talking point for the past year or so has been shoe technology and the astounding development in fast times by runners wearing the various models developed by the sportswear company Nike. Kipchoge will wear the latest model of the Alpha Fly with its raised heel, decorated with Kenyan national colours on Sunday. Bekele made interesting comments at the press conference, saying he's had some injury niggles with this model, so we'll stick with the older Vaporfly model, with which he won Berlin a year ago. Asked about the ethical aspect of such shoe development, Eliud Kipchoge again expressed his view that technology was bound to bring changes.
We live in 21st century, whereby first we need to accept change. Secondly, is that development go hand in hand with technology. The shoe is good and it's actually the accepted technology pattern. I'll give him an example that we are now doing press conference virtually. Is that not technology? It's technology. So we need to accept technology in our hearts. Move on. We don't want actually to track around because development actually, if we want to develop in this world, we should actually accept technology and marry technology.
Both men and women will race just over 19 and a half laps in St James's Park before turning onto the Mall for what should resemble the traditional London finish. It will make for a much tighter racing panorama, with even elite runners being lapped by the leaders. If you consider personal bests, then Bridget Koskay is way ahead in the charts among the women. Her world record of 2:14.04 in Chicago last October was equivalent to the moon landing in women's marathon running. Her fellow Kenyan, Ruth Chepngetich, the world champion, has a best of more than 3 minutes slower as the number two on the all-time world performances. Bridget Koskay reflected on how much the world record did for her confidence.
When I break the record in Chicago last year, I was feeling very happy, and it changed my training career, and it made me to be more encouraged to do a lot of training and to focus on training so that I could try again to break that record again.
Both Ruth Chepngetich and Vivian Cheruiyot, who won London 2 years ago, will be challenging for Olympic selection on the Kenyan marathon team, and this race could be crucial. Chepngetich has had to adapt, like so many, but appears satisfied with her preparation at her usual training base of Ngong near Nairobi.
In my training, I trained well. I'm feeling good. And I'm ready for the run on Sunday to try my best.
In any year, London can be relied upon to produce marathon headlines, but for so many reasons, not all of them about sport, this should be a memorable event indeed. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Andy Edwards in London.
Thanks to athletics reporter Andy Edwards in London for that report. The World Players Association, or WPA, applauded a recent decision to reduce punishments for athletes who test positive for recreational drugs. The WPA represents around 85,000 athletes globally through more than 100 player associations. Previously, athletes who tested positive for recreational drugs would be banned from competing for 2 years, but the World Anti-Doping Agency, or WADA, announced new rules in August that reduce suspensions to 3 months if an athlete can show the drugs were consumed out of competition and were not to enhance their athletic performance. If an athlete completes a drug rehabilitation program, it would only be a one-month suspension. Earlier this week, WADA published a revised list of drugs, including cocaine, heroin, ecstasy, and THC, as substances eligible for the lower punishment. WPA Executive Director Brendan Schwab said they are pleased that WADA agreed to manage substance abuse cases from the perspective of player health and well-being. Next up, we hear from VOA's very own Jim Stevenson, who hosts the weekly sports show Game Room. Today, we share his update on skiing and the Olympics. Here's Jim.
Some sports seem to be better than others for social distancing in the age of COVID. Skiing might be considered among them. But in Austria, Chancellor Sebastian Kurz has announced that all après-ski events during the upcoming winter tourism season are now banned, while tourism in general is still okay.
Skifahren, Kulinarik, Natur und Gastfreundschaft genießen, Freizeit.
Skiing, enjoying food, nature and hospitality, outdoor activities and shopping, not just in the ski resorts but also in the cities, a wellness holiday in Austria, culture, tourism, all of this would be possible during the winter. What will not be possible is a pre-ski in the manner that we know from the past. The infection risk is simply too high. For all winter sports fans, one thing is clear: yes to skiing fun, but without a pre-ski.
Wintersportfans gilt daher klar: Skivergnügen ja, aber ohne Après-Ski.
An outbreak at a popular resort in western Austria is considered one of Europe's earliest super spreader events of the pandemic. The cluster in the Alpine ski resort has been blamed for thousands of infections worldwide during the early phase of the pandemic. International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach met online with officials in Japan on the first of 2 days of meetings focused on how to pull off the delayed Tokyo Games.
We are at a crucial point for making the next achievement, and this is one which has never done before. This means organize safe Olympic Games, postponed Olympic Games, this is already historic, and then postponed Olympic Games, which are fit for the post-corona world.
Bach suggested a suitable number of doses of a COVID-19 vaccine would be available before the postponed Olympics are to open July 23rd, 2021.
There will be hundreds of millions of doses being available already in the first half of the next year.
The IOC chief in Switzerland urged cooperation to make the Olympics a success.
We are sitting together in one boat. The only thing we have to do now is to row in the same direction. And this is what I see, what we are doing.
Tokyo Governor Yuriko Koike expressed her gratitude for Bach's pledge to hold the Tokyo Olympics even before a coronavirus vaccine is found.
Sports,
I take his remark as a positive reaction on conducting sports safely with athletes and audiences. It's reassuring. As many sports events are about to be held soon, I think it's crucial for us to try many things as well as pay careful attention to it. Bach declined to speculate on the Olympics happening without fans in the venues, but he said progress with vaccines and rapid testing for COVID-19 would not be the complete answer for staging the Tokyo Olympics.
I'm sure that we will make it, and we will make these Olympic Games, which will be historic in different respects, that we will make it a success, and we will make it a success together.
The Japanese public remains skeptical about the July 23rd through August 8th Games going ahead. The Game Room opens with new stories each week. Or play anytime on VOAnews.com.
Thanks to VOA's very own Jim Stevenson for that report. The Summer Olympics may have been postponed, but the Winter Olympics for Beijing are still on track for 2022. In Australia, sports organizers haven't let a lack of snow in the country hamper preparations for those games. They've built a 37-meter-tall ski jump where freestyle skiers land in a swimming pool. Members of the Flying Kangaroos aerial ski team climb to the top of the facility, then hurtle down the ramp toward the water. They reach maximum speeds of over 70 kilometers an hour and launch up to 17 meters above the water. That allows them to practice their aerial maneuvers before splashing down safely in the pool. The $6.5 million project in Brisbane is the first year-round outdoor aerial facility in the world. Here's ski jumper Danielle Scott.
So for my preparation personally, this facility is huge. I'm coming back from a knee injury, which then gives me the flexibility to train at any point in time that I need to. With COVID as well, our schedule's all over the place, so it's allowing us to focus on the things at hand and put some good quality training time in.
Scott was one of the first to try the new ski jump. beginning with single and basic double somersaults.
So this water ramp facility is pretty key in that we've taken all bits and pieces from other facilities around the world and put them together to find that perfect balance. So I think we're pretty happy with it so far, and I can't wait to get off the bigger jumps to test them out.
She says she hopes the new facility will encourage young people to join the sport.
So for the development of the sport in Australia, this is huge. To be able to have kids filtering through and just trying the sport, seeing what it's all about, it's going to bring so much more success, because we were at the mercy of other countries, and to send kids overseas is just too much. So I'm pretty excited for those future generations.
Australia does have some outdoor skiing areas in New South Wales state, but many of its athletes have to travel abroad to train, and the new facility means ski jumpers can stay at home. Nigeria celebrated its 60th anniversary of independence yesterday. One topic of discussion as Nigerians reflect on their past is the country's performance in sports. Emeka Enyadike is a Johannesburg-based sports analyst. He told reporter Iron Mike Mbonye that although Nigeria has produced good athletes over the past six decades, the country has underperformed given its potential.
I think in over 60 years, Nigeria has underperformed given the size of the country, the appetite for sports, and the passion that we have for producing great sportsmen, and also the followership of the sports. You know, we in the Olympics, we've won one gold medal from long jump. We've won also a gold medal by default from the Sydney 2000 Olympics after we had silver. And then we won gold with the football team, a soccer team, in Atlanta 96. And then, of course, in the African Nations Cup, we've won three times, 1980, 1994, and 2013. What's on the whole, Nigeria produced some really amazing athletes in so many fields. In boxing, we had Dick Tiger and Hogan Kid Bassi, who were world champions. And then we've had so many others, Anthony Peters, who's known as the Nightmare. And in athletics, a lot of great athletes. Nigerian-born players continue to excel in places like the NFL, the NBA, and there's been growth in sports like basketball and so on and so forth. But I think that given our potential, Nigeria should be a lot more successful, you know, not just in Africa, but also be punching right above our weight right now in global sports. You know, the women's side, we've also done pretty well with the women's basketball team emerging now as a strong force in basketball. And the Super Falcons have been very, very successful. But I mean, more than that, I think generally Nigeria should be one of the big powerhouses in sports. And there is still the potential that there's something can be. Looking back over the last 60 years, I think Nigeria has underperformed.
Has Nigeria lived up to expectations? And what has been the highs and lows in sports for Nigeria in the past 60 years?
If you look at the highs and the lows, I don't think Nigeria has. Yes, some of the highs have been really good, like Atlanta 96 winning the soccer gold was massive. And then also the performances in the World Cup in the 90s, really remarkable. And other than that, you know, tennis, we had our moments with Nduka Odizo doing well at Wimbledon. But other than, I mean, since then, there hasn't been so much. When you find that there's a lot of Nigerian-born players doing well for England in rugby, Nigeria should be a force. If you look around, you know, with the Olympics, what the East Africans, especially the Kenyans and the Ethiopians, have done consistently. For me, you know, the low for me has been not being able to produce those moments consistently. And that's something that just doesn't measure up to the capacity that the country has. Generally, and then of course the politicization, which, you know, infighting, negatives with non-payment of allowances and all of that. But, you know, the moments where you find really remarkable achievements, whenever they do happen somehow they kind of captivate the world, and that's something that everyone still looks up to. One area where I will say undoubtedly it's just the appetite and the passion for sports generally, especially football in the country, is something that can match or measure up to anywhere else in the world. And that's something that just needs to be harnessed locally.
Which way forward for Nigeria in sports?
In terms of the way forward, I believe there needs to be a conscious effort to try and exploit the commercial value of the sports industry generally. And that's the one thing that will change everything in terms of, you know, sports development, infrastructure development, athletes development, fan engagement, building all the sports technology around it, the passion, and, of course, commercial value all the ingredients are there for Nigeria to take its rightful space and even to keep the best athletes there, because everything is there to build very viable sports leagues and sports competitions, university and college style sports facilities and sports industry. All of those ingredients are there, and once those can be properly harnessed, this is the one country in Africa that has the capacity to have an industry that's pretty much, maybe not a par, but has some bit of semblance with the likes of the UK and Germany and the US and Australia, China. Because for the most part, we have the athletic build, we have speed, which should make us amongst the fastest sprinters around the world, and also football leagues that are very viable. But the politics and some of the organization, it just doesn't rise to the level that is enough to drive the change that we see.
That was sports analyst Emeka Anyadike speaking to reporter Iron Mike Mbonye by phone from Johannesburg, South Africa. We now head to Cote d'Ivoire, where an activist is promoting health and a clean environment through cycling. Tom Scali of Reuters reports.
Africa's traffic-clogged streets make it the deadliest continent in the world for pedestrians and cyclists, according to the World Health Organization. But a new generation of cycling activists, like Andy Costa from Ivory Coast, thinks the momentum is now with them.
The bicycle is the transport of the future.
Lockdown restrictions and the need to avoid public transport have focused attention on cycling. But for Costa, it was wider health concerns that propelled him into action.
When I used to go to school, we just had one kid who was asthmatic in my class. Today in our children's classes, 50% are ill with asthma. So it really demonstrates the negative impact the environment has on the health of our children. Our environment is really polluted.
Last month, after 10 years of campaigning, authorities told Costa he could help plan bike lanes in part of the commercial capital, Abidjan. Jacques Gabriel Ehou, mayor of the Plateau Central Business District, said the lanes were part of the solution to make roads more fluid and improve health. But Costa is not stopping at that victory. He says his aim is to change the perception that cycling is for the rural poor. And his organization, My Dream for Africa, make videos with celebrities such as soccer star Didier Drogba. He started with Ivory Coast, he says, but the vision is to make the whole continent more cyclable.
Thanks to Tom Scali of Reuters for that report. That's it for this Friday, October 2nd edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Thanks to our producer, Mukbil Yabaro, and thanks to you for listening. Keep it here on The Voice of America for International Edition with Steve Miller coming up next. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great evening.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive.